Hey guys, this is Anna. So before we get on with the show today, let's hear from our sponsor.
All right, everybody, this is Ramblings of a Transgender Christian Podcast. I am your host, Anna Hudak. So today we have our very first official episode of the Ramblings of a Transgender Christian Podcast, which is being video recorded. Nope, I am not joking. On YouTube, you can see a video version. You can literally see me, just watch me do this podcast episode as I'm doing it. So yeah, if you prefer watching people instead of listening to people, go down, watch the podcast on YouTube. The link to my YouTube channel is in the description. So just wanted to let everybody know about that. I did a test episode earlier this week. The test episode, it was exclusive to Patreon. I still have an extra bonus episode coming out, or actually by the time you hear this, will have been out, I think. I don't know, it might still be coming out on Patreon. So yeah, so just thought everybody would love to know that. So but yeah, so exciting times for us, and I'm hopefully going to be able to get this podcast on the podcast TV as well, so, but we'll see. At least on YouTube still, so. Anywho. So yeah, exciting times today. In addition to that, we have Steven Crowder versus Sam Cedar. I have been waiting for this for a while. So yeah, for those who don't know, Sam Cedar, he's the host of the leftist radio program, The Majority Report. He has been trying to get Steven Crowder, yes, louder of Crowder, Steven Crowder, to debate him for a while. Steven, I guess, like told him that they would debate. But then he chickened out at the last minute years ago. And then was like, oh, you don't have enough YouTube subscribers. Well, now they do have enough. And Steven Crowder still keeps chickening out. And so H3H3, yes, even Klein himself, got Steven Crowder to debate him. But H3H3, being the troll that he is, decided to get Sam Cedar to come on and debate him as well, sneak on Sam Cedar. As yeah, Sam and Steven debated, and apparently the episode of H3H3 where we did it is out right now, as I'm speaking. This is Tuesday morning, so. But yeah, so I am excited to see that. I cannot wait to get to the library where they have internet and watch that, because oh my gosh. Ooh, can't wait to see Steven get his comeuppance. His very public comeuppance. Oh, what a horrid person Steven Crowder is. But yeah, so there's that. I am really, really fucking pumped to see that. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else I wanted to talk about? Yeah, I think there's kind of one small little thing that's kind of that's kind of been a bit rough. Not gonna lie. So like, apparently my extended families had several family gatherings this year, and family gatherings that nobody bothered to tell me about. I guess I just straight up wasn't invited, so that's kind of fun. My extended family, apparently just nobody, and even my parents didn't even bother to tell me, oh yeah, there are these family gatherings you could possibly go to. So I have just straight up wasn't invited, or yeah, my parents just decided it wasn't worth telling me about. So yeah, so it's just kind of like interesting, this like. So, like, this is supposedly the family side that was accepting of me. So it's just like, what's the meaning of all this? So, yeah, so that's interesting. Not getting the not the family deciding that they don't really want to see ya. It's gonna be interesting, assuming they ever do. Let's be honest, assuming they ever do. What's gonna be like? Because none of them have seen me as a girl yet. Because like, I started transitioning a week before, literally a week before everything got locked down here in Indiana. And they did see me in August, I believe, early August last year, but like I was still presenting as a guy. And that would have been what, like, trying to think, that would have been about 5 months into transition, you know, still presenting as a guy, so it's not like I had that many changes at that point, you know. Really, the thing I was doing the most of hiding was my breasts. Like, my breasts were kind of hard to hide at that point, but that was about it. But I did it, and I was able to hide them. But yeah, none of them have seen me as a girl yet. But let's be honest, probably wouldn't really be able to notice a difference. This HRT absolutely hates me. I mean, it is amazing how much it hates me. This face just refuses to actually feminize in any meaningful way. Like, I literally look like how I used to before transition, except maybe just ever so slightly rounder cheeks, just ever so slightly. So it's like, I look the same. You know, and then, like, I sit here and read and see pictures of all these trans women with all these fucking amazing changes and, like, no time at all. Like, you know, like, I had talked to trans women, including a friend I have, who, like, they were passing in, like, 3 months, you know? In, like, 3 months' time, you know, they were going to restaurants, you know? And the servers were like, ma'am! And then, like, I go out anywhere, and, you know, even with a mask on, I may still get called sir. It's just like, what? What? I don't get it. How? You know, but like, I'm reading about all these trans women, you know, who, you know, including that same friend, you know, who, you know, in like no time at all have like fucking D-cup breasts. It's just like, what? How do you have D-cup breasts? I didn't even know that was possible on HRT. What the fuck? Like, I don't even have, like, I've been transitioning 15 months. My breasts barely even big enough to fit into B-cup bras. What the hell? How do you have D-cups in, like, fucking 8 months? Of course, my friend, you know, it's more like 18 months, but still. So it's like, how? How is this possible? You know, other trans women, you know, just like, I don't know, like Asu shrinking, that's another thing. Like, all these trans women talking about, oh, we're shrinking, you know, like, constantly shrinking. It's just like, I've been 5'7" since age 11. Once I hit age 11, I stopped growing. I'm still 5'7", 15 months into transition. The HRT gods hate me. That's all I can say. The HRT gods, they fucking despise me in every way, shape, and form. I have not lost any foot sizes, you know, and for I've not gone down any shoe sizes, you know. Pretty much the only thing that's really happened was slightly smaller, slightly bigger face, slightly bigger boobs. You know, like, I'm not joking when I say that I was doing better breast growth before transition than I was after transition. Because, like, I was taking, I forget what it was called, I think it's saw palmetto or something like that, and I was taking something else as well, I know, saw palmetto and something else, but, you know, natural stuff. I'm not joking when I say I was literally doing better breast growth before that. Like, I had breasts before transitioning, you know? I was doing actually really well with progesterone for the first 3 months span I used them. But now it's like I'm on progesterone again. It's just like we're not really seeming to have any impact at all. So it's just like, you know, but, so yeah, heard that. Not gonna lie, yesterday I was really, really dysphoric. Or, you know, and it's just like, holy shit, I need bottom surgery so bad. I know I'm never going to be able to get it because I'm never going to be able to afford it because it's so fucking expensive. But, you know, like, I'm sorry, you know, but, like, knowing that I'm never getting it because there's no way on hell I'm ever affording it Is this one of the many, many reasons why I genuinely hope to be dead by the age of 25? Because there's no fucking way I live the rest of my life with a penis. I'm sorry. It's not happening. I just simply cannot do it, okay? There's a reason why as a toddler, I almost cut it off with scissors, okay? No. No, just one of the many reasons why I hope to die before 25. The only reason I would ever want to live to be an old age, you know, is if my youngest sister never really finds a family. Because, like, I know that dying, you know, quote-unquote dying alone, it would be something that would probably be rough on her, you know, it's probably something that she probably would be scared of, you know. Like, I don't really understand the fear of dying alone. Like, yeah, unless you're literally dying around other people who are dying, you're dying alone. Plus, you were birthed into this world alone. So it's like, you came into this world alone, you're gonna leave this world alone. Duh. You know? But so also, I guess, I mean, yeah, I don't get it, especially as somebody who has been close to death before. Like, there was a time, the last time when I almost drowned. Like, I was so close to death, I could literally see the light. Like, I'm not joking, like, I literally saw what they call the light. I was that close to death. Okay, believe me, when you're that close to death, you're not giving a shit about who's around you. Like, it's actually very, very peaceful. You're just like, oh, I'm about to die. And that's all you're thinking about. You're not thinking about whatever's around you and all that shit. Let me tell you from personal experience as someone who's almost drowned to death. Okay? Believe me. You're not gonna give a shit on your deathbed when you're that close to death. I'm just being honest with you. But yeah, so there's that. But yeah, you know, like, I know that it's something that might affect her, you know, and if it does, and be honest, I wouldn't want to die young. In fact, I would want to live to be, you know, die after her, just so that she at least has somebody there. That would be me, so. If she couldn't find a family and all that stuff. Before her death. That's the only reason I would ever want to live old. But be honest, I've always wanted to die young. Ever since I was a kid. I always just knew. I don't want to be old. I want to die young. I'm sorry. Like, for me, you know, there's so much trauma from being abused growing up. Gender dysphoria. So many other things, you know, but mostly abuse and dysphoria. Just like, I want to die young. And that's continuing, you know, I honestly have never had anything happen in my life that's like, yeah, I want to live to be old. There's just straight up nothing in my life that's ever happened that's just like, that makes me want to live long. Only things happen in my life as just like, yeah, young death sounds good. I'm happy with a young death. So yeah, I got that depressing talk out of the way. But hopefully I die at least with a vagina, bringing it all back to, you know, dysphoria and, you know, my previous med talk about, wanting the surgeries and, you know, the transition gods. So, hopefully at least I get, you know, that would be my dream. It's not gonna happen, but whatever, you know, that would at least be my dream. But, you know, it'd be a proper way to die, in my opinion, but probably not ever gonna happen because there's no way in hell I ever, afford it. So, anyway. Moving on, we do have a little bit of news. A famous person has come out as trans. So, of course, we gotta cover it. So, of course, a link to the article will be in the description below. Japan Times is reporting this. Soccer player Kumi Yokoyama comes out as transgender. It would be harder to live closeted. Washington Spirit forward Kumi Yokoyama came out as a transgender man on Saturday, becoming the highest-profile Japanese athlete to do so in a country where acceptance of LGBTQ issues faces numerous hurdles despite recent trends towards understanding. In a video interview posted on the YouTube channel, former Nadeshiko Japan teammate Yuki Nagasato, the 27-year-old said that playing in the U.S. and Germany has shown Yokoyama that it could be possible to live openly. I've dated several women over the years, but I had to stay closeted in Japan, Yokoyama said in the 18-minute interview. In Japan, I'd always asked if I could be the boyfriend. In Japan, I'd always be asked if I had a boyfriend. But here, in the United States, I'm asked if I have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. When the girlfriend said there was no reason for me to stay closeted, it really hit me. Coming out wasn't something I was enthusiastic about, but I think if my life, but I think about my life going forward, it would be harder to live closeted, so I found the courage to come out. The former Nadeshiko striker, who participated in the 2019 Women's World Cup in France, said he had undergone top surgery or removal of breast tissue after turning 20 years old and would undergo further gender-affirming procedures after retiring as a player. Besided Canada international and OL Reign midfielder Quinn, who also went public with their transition in 2020 as an inspiration. A tweet from The Spirit said that Yokoyama, like Quinn, who goes by one name, would use the gender-neutral pronouns they and them going forward. Quinn wore a sweatshirt that said, "Protect trans kids before a game." And I realize that's what taking action looks like, Yokoyama said. To be able to accept people you have no relationship with, that's the kind of person I like to become, and I hope that we can create that society. The Tokyo native became aware of her gender identity as a child, cutting her hair short beginning in elementary school and refusing to wear feminine clothing for the traditional Shichigo San ceremony celebrated by 3 and 7 year old girls and 5 year old boys in Japan. I never saw myself as a girl, so I hated puberty, Yokoyama said. When I reached adulthood, I thought maybe play soccer for another 1 or 2 years. So after that season ended, I had my breasts removed. Normally you can't have it unless you're receiving hormones, but my doctor understood my situation. I would have been caught by doping tests if I was on hormones, so I just had the top surgery. While same-sex marriage and LGBT acceptance have gained increasing support among Japan's younger population, athletes are often pressured to remain closeted even after playing careers ended. Transgender rights activist Fumino Sugiyama has been frank about his struggles during his time representing Japan in women's fencing, while retired basketball player Ryan Hill came off transgender man last October. Gan Matsunaka, head of Pride House Tokyo, expressed hope that the recent wave of Japanese athletes who have come out as LGBT would lead to more support for those still in the closet. But Matsunaka lamented a recent failure by the ruling Liberal Democratic Party to pass a bill promoting LGBT understanding ahead of the Tokyo Olympic and Paralympic Games. I was deeply involved in the bill, and I only felt a sense of crisis after it failed to pass, Matsunaka told the Japan Times. But for a former Japan international like Yokoyama to come out in this way sends a big message. Nagasato has supported Pride House's efforts in the past, and she's very conscious of gender issues and raising them with the Japanese public. So for her to host Yokoyama's announcement on her YouTube channel is a great way to go about it. Matsunaka emphasized that while Yokoyama is coming out with draw attention, a more important outcome would be a positive reaction from Japanese soccer world and the country as a whole. There tends to be a lot of focus on the moment of coming out. There's always a history that's led to a person coming, being able to come out. It is a line, not a single point, he said. It's important to not place all the responsibility on the person coming out and make it about them, but instead to think of how to make changes in the community and society. Spirit manager Richie Burke expressed his heartfelt support for Yokoyama, who was an unused substitute in the team's away game against the Chicago Red Stars on Saturday night. "We have no time for hate. We only have love in our football club," the English coach said following the 1-1 draw. adding that the club had been aware of Yokoyama's transition upon her signing at the end of 2019 and offered his full backing. I love Kumi, always will, and I'll always have a special place for somebody with that mentality. They are very brave and they are committed to this process. And if that's what they want to do, I'm going to do whatever I can to support them. As long as they're happy, I'm happy. Yokoyama's announcement also drew praise from other LGBTQ Japanese athletes, such as rugby player and one-time Japan international Eri Murakami, who came out as a lesbian in April, and Shiho Shimoyamada, who became Japan's first openly gay professional athlete in February 2019, plays for the Nadeshiko League's Espada Setagia. To smile this much when you're coming out isn't very common, and it was incredibly moving, Shimoyamada tweeted. I hope Kumi's thoughts reach as many people as possible. Yokoyama acknowledged the position of her announcement would place him in, suggesting that despite not wanting to play a leading role, he would be involved in LGBT activism going forward. Lately, the word LGBTQ has become more commonly known in Japan and has been covered in by the media. But people in my position aren't able to raise our voices and talk about it, Yokoyama said. Japan may be a small country, but if all of us speak up together, then we can help raise awareness. So yeah, congratulations for Kumi coming out in a country that is still pretty negative towards LGBT people. I can't even imagine the courage it has taken to come out in such a country like that. Thankfully, though, like as they said in the article, younger people are more supportive. Unfortunately, the older generations are still very, very anti-LGBT. LGBT people still don't have even quite the rights, even here in America, as slim as the rights that LGBT people have in America are. So, yeah, congratulations to Kumi. I had to talk about it, you know, being a famous person coming out as trans. So, yeah, moving on from that, we do, of course, today have an article, that a op-ed that I will be tearing apart, like usual. In this article, I mean, in this, episode. It's gonna be a fun one, let me tell you that. Hint, hint, the title of the episode is a hint towards, what we're talking about. But yeah, so before we get to that, let's see, actually, how is time? Oh yeah, we got plenty of time, we got plenty of time. Okay, so, there's something I kind of want to talk about. I already mentioned this on Tumblr and Twitter. I kind of wanted to talk about it here as well. So, if you've been following me on Tumblr and Twitter, you know, I have been struggling greatly with my faith lately. Where, I'm going to be honest, I don't really know if I believe. I don't know if I'm still a Christian or not. I don't know if I believe in Christianity or not. And I mean, and one of the big reasons for that lately, and I talked about it on my just this past week, and I'll try to find a link to it, for at least the Tumblr. I'm going to try to remember to link the Tumblr version of the post in the show notes. It's just how hateful the institution of the church is. It's like I've been studying a lot LGBT movements around the world, but especially in Eastern Europe lately, because. Especially because Eastern Europe, European countries have really been cracking down on LGBT rights these last few years. I mean, really making an effort to give the middle finger to LGBT rights. So I've really been studying Eastern European LGBT issues and, you know, what's been going on there. Especially Hungary and Poland. And just been reading about how so much of this, in fact, most of it, is spearheaded by the Catholic Church. And I think about all the horrid things that the Catholic Church and even Protestant Church have pushed over these years. You know, they are the biggest reasons for lack of LGBT acceptance. You know, they are the biggest reasons for the subjugation of women. You know, and so many horrid things. You know, around the world. You know, if it wasn't for the church, you know, it would have been. You know, there's a good chance we could have gotten rid of slavery sooner, because most of it was propped up by the church. You know, Jim Crow propped up by religious teachings. You know, especially here in America, you know, racism has always been defended using the Bible. It's been Protestant and Catholic churches propping up segregation, the drug war today, you know, fighting against, you know, the right to have an abortion or even birth control. You know, I just found out from a Catholic friend on Tumblr that Catholics are, I guess, are even against condoms. Like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck? But it's just like, the church is the greatest, and okay, it's not the greatest, it's the most powerful function of evil in our world. There is nothing in this world that creates more evil, creates more oppression than the church. For the main colonizers in this world, they have colonized other cultures with their anti-LGBT, anti-women, and their racist beliefs. You know, like for instance, many cultures, like even in like Africa or the Middle East, you know, were perfectly accepting of non-binary people. But then the Catholic Church comes in and says, "Oh no, that's sodomy. You must hate them now." And boom, guess what happens? I mean, there's literally nothing more evil, more despicable on this earth than the institution of the church. You know, like I firmly believe that, you know, to know if something is good or bad, you have to look at its fruits. What is, you know, the fruit that it bears? Well, the institution, when I look at the church, all I see is evilness. All I see is oppression. All I see is a hatred. All I see is wickedness. I'm gonna be straight up with you all, and I'm not joking one bit when I say I literally know more atheists, agnostics, Buddhists, Muslims, who are better human beings, who are more accepting, kind human beings, peoples whose lives are more worthy to emulate than Christians. Like, just atheists and agnostics by themselves. Fuck it, even Muslims. Like, I literally know more Muslims whose lives I'd rather emulate than Christians. The fruit has been born. The church is a wicked, wicked institution. And when I see that, it's just like, it makes it hard to believe that Christianity could be true if this is the result of one believing in Christianity. Once again, not saying there's any good Christians. There are great Christians. But when I look at, you know, how many great Christians I know, compared, you know, and I grew up in the church, you know, compared to how many atheists, you know, non-believers, you know, atheists, Muslims, agnostics, whatever. I know far more of those, you know, people who are better human beings than people who call themselves Christians that I grew up with. Even today. And to be honest, I don't know if I could. If the fruit is so beyond rotten, is this damn rotten for Christianity. I'm having this trouble seeing why the fuck I should believe in it, especially when this religion overwhelmingly wants me dead, wants me gone, doesn't want anything to do with me. Like, why would I want to be a part of a religion that hates my guts? You know? It's like, Christianity is great and all, as long as you're not a minority, is what I've been learning. Christianity is great for the majority, but not for the minority. And it's just something I've been severely struggling with lately. I'm gonna be honest, I don't know if I believe anymore. I really don't know if I'm a Christian anymore. If I actually believe any of us anymore. Probably not. Not saying I've completely abandoned it yet, you know, but I'm almost there, if I'm being straight up. I have almost completely done Christianity. I'm right on the verge of doing so. I just can't reconcile the fruits versus, you know, what they claim to believe, you know, and the Bible, you know. Like, I still love the teachings of Jesus, you know, and Jesus is still someone I absolutely want to emulate. But I don't know if I would ever call myself a Christian anymore. Anyway, enough of that. I think I've really said everything that I want to say about that. Let's take apart an op-ed, shall we? So this is from the Christian Post. It's written, and of course, you know, we'll have a web archive version for you. The headline is called, "Your Body, Whose Choice?" by John Stone Street. So this is how it starts. In a rather stunning op-ed at CNN a couple of weeks ago, medical doctor offered an answer to one of the great worldview questions. What is the highest good? Bodily autonomy, wrote Dr. Drutches, is the highest human right and should trump all other considerations in medical decision-making. Adults of capacity should hold the ultimate authority over their own bodies and the medical decisions for their minor children. The obvious context of this op-ed, which should be especially obvious to anyone who's ever attempted to actually disagree with her doctors, is gender transition. Smartly, this doctor offered a philosophical take on the matter, since medical justifications for cross-sex hormones and bodily mutilating surgeries are lacking. Ah, yes! Lacking! Just ignore the hundreds of studies showing that, you know, they're actually beneficial. But yes, you know, if you just ignore hundreds upon hundreds of studies saying that transition is beneficial for trans people, accepting trans people for who they are is beneficial, and, you know, getting gender-affirming surgeries is beneficial, you know, if you just ignore all those studies, then yes, evidence is lacking. You just have to ignore the hundreds upon hundreds of studies that have been released for decades upon decades, you know, for about the past 100 years. Obviously, you know, in his most recent book, to continue on with the article, in his most recent book, What It Means to Be Human, The Case for the Body and Public Bioethics, bioethicist Dr. Carter Sneed addresses the growing influence of expressive individualism over medicine. Yes! Being trans is just expressive individualism. It's not something that you're born as, you see. It's something that you chose because you want to be edgy. Because of, you know, our therapeutic culture, you see. It's not just something that you are, innately are. It's something that you chose, you know, to show society how edgy you are. But, you know, like, look at me, everybody. It's an attention-grabbing tactic. But anyway, continuing on. The vision of a human being being as an atomized and solitary will, which equates human flourishing solely with the capacity to formulate and pursue future plans of one's own invention. It's, according to CNET, causing mission creep in the medical community. What? Yes, human beings do have solitary wills. What the fuck? And also, I love how you say, because human flourishing solely with the capacity to formulate and pursue future plans of one's own invention. Okay, but here's the thing. If that singular person can't flourish, how is humanity supposed to flourish if not everybody is flourishing? Riddle me this, Christian Post and Dr. Carter Sneed. Riddle me this. Hey, do you expect humanity to flourish if individuals are not flourishing themselves? Like, this makes no sense. Make it make sense. Continuing on. Instead of treating sick bodies with a view to heal, bodies are seen as an arbitrary physical matter that should bend like clay to our wills, and medical ethics and science should follow suit. Oh my fucking god. Okay, so basically, trans bodies are just sick, and we must convert them to cisgender. Yeah, because, you know, that totally works, you know? All those hundreds of studies, because we have so much evidence that, you know, it's possible to make trans people cisgender, and it's just possible to get rid of gender dysphoria and make them cis. Yeah, there's so many studies that show that. Yeah, clearly. And this is something that fucking annoys me to be on end. They act as if us trans people are fucking denying biology or, you know, view, you know, our physical bodies as something fucking arbitrary. No! That's the whole point of why we're trans. We're fucking aware of our biology and we are trying to change it to fit in more closely, knowing that we will never be fully cis. There is nothing arbitrary about this. You fucking idiots. We understand the biological realities far better than you do. God damn it, you fucking idiots. Continuing on. If expressing our own wills is the first duty of expressive individualism, accepting everyone else's expression is the second. Oh no, how dare you? Oh no, how horrid that people actually ask you to accept them for who they are. Oh, the horror of it all. How horrid that people ask you to set aside your bigoted preconceptions, you know, and just accept them for who they are. That must be so fucking hard for you. Continuing on the article. Doctors should comply, even if a patient's desired expression requires killing a healthy baby. Oh, so abortion is just expressive individual. What the fuck are you talking about? Do you actually believe that abortion is just something women do willy-nilly just for the fuck of it? Really? That we're just doing this to express themselves as individuals? Really? Oh my fucking god. I have heard some fucking stupid takes on abortion from dipshit pro-life Republican, you know, pro-force birth Republicans like you. But this takes the cake. But this is, that abortion is just expressive individualism. Women are just doing this to express themselves as individuals. Are you fucking me right now? Are you fucking me? It's amazing, like, how fucking detached from reality do you have to be to believe any of this bullshit? Continuing on. Cutting off a healthy body part Guess what? These quote-unquote healthy body parts bring people great distress. And oftentimes will lead to suicide if they don't. And hundreds of studies show that this is actually beneficial to that trans person, you fucking idiot. Continuing on. Or causing death upon request. Oh my god. More bitching about assisted suicide. Get over it, will you? Do you really think that it's like so do you really think that it's more ethical for that person to just sit there and fucking suffer for days on end? Really? Really? Just suffer needlessly. Days on end. Okay. But yeah, you're the moral one. Okay. Just want to make this clear. You think it's more moral for people just needlessly suffer than for them to be put out of their misery? Actually, I just realized you do think it is because you think it's perfectly immoral for trans people to suffer. Or for for a woman and to have to carry the baby of a fucking rapist or abuser. I'm sorry, I forgot. You think you see for suffering as a fucking virtue. Fuck off, asshole. I mean, like, seriously, is this guy even remotely capable of human empathy? Just reading this, I say no. It's amazing. Continuing on. Medicine has long balanced bodily autonomy against other interests. We've just spent a year and a half wearing masks, socially distancing ourselves away from airplanes and crowded restaurants and Zooming church services in order to fight a virus. Doctors don't give narcotics to anyone who asks, or perform weight loss surgery on dangerously thin patients with eating disorders. And they can be prosecuted if they do so. Let's see. So yeah, apparently, yes, guess what? They do weigh bodily autonomy of folks' other interests when it comes to abortion, to trans people, and to assisted suicide. And they found that those other interests are in the interest of the trans person and the person getting an abortion and assisted suicide. They find that it's beneficial for them to do so. Guess what? This is not just something the doctors do on a whim. We're not fucking stupid, unlike you. Continuing on. To get around this obstacle, Dr. Grutchis adds the caveat that full autonomy should only belong to adults with the capacity. What's not clear is what counts as capacity. How to define it and who gets to decide who has achieved it. In reality, the medical community is increasingly paying lip service to a philosophy it doesn't intend to keep to and it can't actually live by. Oh dear God, here we go. For all starters, not all expressions are treated with the same degree of fanfare as this doctor implies. Consider how detransitioners, who those who've undergone gender transition but later regret, are treated by both medical institutions and the media. They are treated as naive or non-existent or dishonest. Okay. Question. Do you know the number of detransitioners, the percentage of people who detransition? Less than 1%. Let me repeat that. The number of people who detransition are less than 1%. And the two biggest reasons why people detransition are because of physical safety. It is not physically safe for them to continue transitioning. Or because they don't have the money to continue transitioning. This whole fucking thing of people who are regretting transition is a fucking, like, there's literally, it's a nine story. There's literally so fucking few of them. But the notion that we should be sitting here propping these people up on a pedestal is so fucking ridiculous. Not saying they shouldn't have any voice. They should. But this fucking retarded notion that somehow their voice matters more than trans people, who, by the way, more than 99% of trans people who transition don't detransition or fucking happy with how they are. Guess what? That's the thing. More than 99.9% of trans people, I think it's literally 99.9% of trans people, never, you know, are happy with her transitions. You know, they don't want to detransition, but because there's like this 0.1% of people who regret it, apparently they matter more. Are you fucking me right now? Yeah, but yes, let's listen to the detransitioners over the trans people who, the vast majority, like literally almost every single person who has transitioned and is happy with it. Fucking asshole. Disingenuous jerk. Continuing on in the article, how often do we hear of women in crisis pregnancies who heroically choose life rather than death for their preborn child? So it's heroic for a mother to die rather than have her child die. I can't even begin. And these people call themselves pro-life. It just shows the life of the mother means nothing to these fuckers. They mean nothing to these people. The only thing that matters is the life of the unborn. The life of the living doesn't matter. The life of the unborn, on the other hand, oh yeah, that matters in every way, shape, and form. I fucking can't. This is why these people are not pro-life. For pro-forced birth. Because if you're pro-life, I'd hate to break it to you, if you were actually pro-life, you would care more about the life of the living, of the currently living. You know, the life of the living would take precedence over the life of the unborn. I'm sorry. Moving on. Or what of those who face suffering or disabilities and choose to live lives of courage, influence, and grace rather than accepting what's being called aid in dying? I don't, you know, before you comment on what assisted suicide is or aid in dying is, maybe you should actually do some fucking research on what it is. You guys, if they don't just, like, do you actually think that they, like, people who end up paralyzed, you know, like, who end up in wheelchairs, like, if ever actually saying, hey, instead of living the rest of your life in a wheelchair, would you like to rather fucking die? That's not how this works. How do you think this works? Because clearly, you don't understand how this works. Just reading this article. Oh my god. New rule. Before you comment on something, you probably should actually know what the fuck you're talking about. Because clearly you have no idea what the fuck you're talking about when it comes to trans people or aid in dying. Oh my god. Or even abortion. Because apparently you don't even know the reasons why women actually get abortions. Oh god. Continuing on. Will these decisions also be applauded, or will they be used as an excuse to claim that these patients have lost capacity? The very concept of bodily autonomy was originally a Christian contribution to a cruel and barbaric world. And now, Christians are the ones who are making this a cruel and barbaric world, and are saying, ah yes, you should have no control over your own fucking body. Funny how things have gone full circle. Anyway, continuing on. Far from suggesting that our bodies are mere heaps of matter for us to do with what we will. Yes, because that's what we're saying, obviously. You fucking asshole, idiot. The Christian view was said to defile the body, either our own or another's, is to violate the image of God. So, transitioning is defiling the body. To rape a woman and not allow her to get abortion. That's not defiling another body. I fucking can't. I just fucking can't. Continuing on. Regardless of how old, how young, how healthy, how sick, a Christian views that our bodies are not our own. You were bought with a price, Paul wrote to the church in Corinth. Therefore, glorify God in your body. Yes, here's the thing. I am glorifying God with my body by transitioning. I am glorifying God with my body. Here's how it was before transition. A suicidal mess who couldn't fit in with society even remotely. Okay, still really can't fit in society, but at least I have friends now. I actually can relate to people now. I actually, you know, I'm not suicidal. I am doing what I can to serve God. I'm not so fully, solely focused on myself. This is how I glorify God with my body. And for you to deny otherwise is to deny God's perfect plan. Is to deny what God chose for me before the beginning of time. So yes, I'm sorry. People transitioning actually is glorifying God with their bodies. There's a reason why being a trans Christian is a thing. It's because this is how we glorify God with our bodies. We have decided to make the tough call to stay here and transition so we can better glorify God. So that instead of focusing on ourselves and our own dysphoria, we can actually put that aside and instead focus on Him. But no, you don't want to hear that. You just want to hear your own worldview fucking reinforced because you find trans people icky, you don't understand us, and all that fucking bullshit. Continuing on. A fundamental difference between the kind of bodily autonomy Christianity gave the world and what is assumed today lies in whether or not the body is designed. A Christian view of bodily autonomy of integrity is shaped by a larger telos, or purpose, for which we were made. Yes, and trans people were made transgender. Get the fuck over it. Anyway, continue on. Our bodies are created, not self-determined, for the larger purpose for which we were made, to glorify God and to love our neighbors. So how do you expect me to love my neighbor if I can't even love myself? Riddle me that. Moving on with the article. This is why medical ethics matter for the church. If Christians suffered a mission creep of treating our own bodies as if they should bend to our own wills, whether by abusing assisted reproductive technologies or mutilating healthy body parts or treating medically assisted suicide as a tenable option, or witness to greater God's greater purpose for our bodies will be compromised. The world needs this witness, especially now. Without it, everyone will suffer. No, these people will suffer. Just, oh my God. These people who lack any human empathy, don't understand anything of what we're talking about. I just fucking can't. How horrid are these people? I just can't. I just fucking can't. Oh my God. Anyway, that's everything I've really got for, I think that's everything I got for today's episode. I forgot to do a good news story for today, so unfortunately I'm not going to do that. I'll try to remember it for the next episode. But yeah, let's see, how long have we been going on? Oh yeah, it's time to end this episode, so. Anyway, thanks for listening or watching, everybody. You know, be sure to support this podcast on Patreon. Get episodes early and without ads. And yeah, that's, you know, you can contact me via email, follow me on social media, all that jazz, you know, find all the links to all the articles in the description below, you find time codes and everything, so yeah, that's everything I really got for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful day.